93 FM in Santa Cruz. This is your pirate free radio station. Actually, it's the big boys or the pirates. We're really the community station. That would be the fairer way to put it. Stay with us. We're going to be doing a special broadcast in honor of Martin Luther King's birthday coming up with a reading from High Times, A King-Size Conspiracy. Also have interviews with attorney Kate Wells, Dead On David Silva, and, of course, Vinny the Viper, if he calls in. Plus lots of recorded information, interviews, thoughts, reflections, and cries of pain and rage from the streets. Of the halls of justice, where the only justice is in the corridors or in the halls. It's 1:20 on January 14th, 1999. We're talking to Richard Quigley. Hi, Richard.
Morning.
Richard, you have a whole fistful of papers here with you, apparently regarding two complaints you filed with the Internal Affairs Department of the Sheriff's Office. And what's this about?
Well, okay. On December 2nd, I went over to Kong's Market to get a carton of milk, a sweet roll, and a Pepsi Cola. And Officer Friendly, who came to be known as Officer Nielsen, Deputy Nielsen, he come walling through the door and started bugging me about ID. And so,
how old are you, Mr. Quigley?
I'm 55.
So there wasn't any question of your being underage.
No, he wanted to know who I was, and it was like, well, I says, who wants to know, and what are you going to do with the information? I mean, I was told by a deputy down in Aptos that we don't have to talk to these cops if we don't want to. We just tell them we don't want to talk to them, and then we don't have to talk to them, and that's the way to deal with them when they walk up to you. That's what I was told. I'm just trying to do what they tell me. So I ask him who wants to know and what he's going to do with the information, which I recommend as an opening, I mean, response to any time anybody inquires who you are. But so he wouldn't tell me. He told me he was a sheriff. And I says, well, is that what your mama named you? And if so, what does the A stand for, as if we didn't know?
Hang on.
So then he identifies himself as Deputy Nielsen, and of course I informed him that my name is Quigley, to which he responded, I thought so. And he says, Mr. Quigley, I need you to step outside here, and, you know, I need to talk to you. And I said, well, am I under arrest? He says, no. I said, well, then, what I need is for you to step outside and talk to yourself and leave me the fuck alone. Well, of course, he didn't much care about my needs. He's only focused on his. So we went through this again, and he wouldn't go away. So I asked the girl behind the counter to let me use the phone. I was right across the street from Kate Wells' house, so I'm standing.
Kate Wells is an attorney?
Yeah. So I called her up, and I said, hey, you know, I got this idiot over here jacking me up. You need to get over here and explain to him how the law works, if you don't mind. You know, and she was in her recliner watching television. This is 10 o'clock at night, man, about half asleep. But she's going to come over. So I handed the phone back to the girl behind the counter, and Deputy Dipshit grabs me by my right arm and commences to begin to twist it around behind my back and cuff me up. And it's
like,
whoa.
You mean Deputy Nielsen?
Well, dipshit, Nielsen, it's all the same, you know. Skinhead liar is what he is. But anyway, so he cuffs me up, takes me out of the car, and he's patting me down, getting ready to load me in the back of his patrol car. Still, I haven't found out what he's doing. And Kate walks up and identifies herself and as an attorney, more importantly, my attorney, and asks why he's arresting me, to which he responds that she'll either shut up and move on, or she'll be sitting there in the back of the car with me, or words to that effect. Now, what I didn't know was that somebody down the street had called in a complaint of a prowler. He was 6 foot slim, built, 30 years old, drunken, smelling alcohol, shoulder-length blonde hair. Anybody that's confused me for 30 years old hasn't done so in the last 25.
A full-length beard and...
I got long hair. I mean, he had shoulder-length hair, they said, but greasy-looking, and I don't think greasy. I've gone for dirty now and then. I've been accused of that, but never greasy. Greasy's not one of the things. It's not an appearance that I have, and certainly not drunk or smelling alcohol. Anyway, I didn't find this out until after he pulled me back out of the car. 30 minutes later, uncuffed me, and I'm sorry for the detention, and of course, my response was, you got no fucking idea how sorry you're going to be, you stupid motherfucker. Hi, John.
How are you doing?
And so I went down to Internal Affairs the next morning, and I filed a complaint against him for false arrest, false imprisonment, excessive use of force, and intentional infliction of emotional distress. And at the same time, I picked up a police report. If one had been filed, and sure enough, there was, although I've been told of late that they never file reports on these things. But there was a report filed here. And in the report, in the tradition of the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Office, he lied about just about everything he could think of. He lied about he said that he had identified the reason for the inquiry. He was looking for a prowler. He claimed that I refused to identify myself, which is absurd. He said that Kate had ordered him to discharge me and all this stuff that she was ordering him around. And the part where I knew I had him hung up was that he had accused me of being drunk and smelling alcohol. And I'm a guy that's got a 25-year AA pen with 2 years of tarnish on it laying in a drawer beside my nightstand. I mean, everybody knows that Quig don't drink. Everybody knows that Quig don't drink. So, I filed another internal affairs complaint. I went and got declarations from all the people involved in this so that they'd have some idea of what was going on. And I filed these declarations in support of my complaint now against this deputy for filing a false police report. And I got the answer back from him yesterday. And normally they like to say that these complaints have been found to be unfounded or unsustained. But in this case, I got one that's kind of interesting in that it says the investigation of your complaint has resulted in a exonerated finding against the deputy involved. And exonerated is one of it hung me up. What the hell's that mean?
There are actually four levels of finding that they can find, either sustained, not sustained, unfounded, or exonerated.
Yeah.
And I believe exonerated is, I could be wrong about this, I think that is the third to the lowest finding. The worst finding is unfounded. Exonerated means that there was something to go on, but it was fundamentally not true, your complaint. The next level is not sustained, that there was some evidence for your complaint, but more evidence for the police officer, although I think they may use the clear and convincing evidence standard here. I'm not sure if they'd use that or preponderance of the evidence. And then finally, the sustained standard means, of course, that they found your complaint sustained, which, of course, I have never heard of a deputy's EIA finding a complaint sustained. In fact, I'll probably have to ask them today if they have a record of what their complaints have been in the last 5 years.
Oh, well, you won't have to do that, because I'm going to.
Okay.
One of the things that was kind of interesting is Al Noren, you know, he has...
Former police sheriff.
Yeah, he's sheriff before this dimwit we got now. But Al used to fire liars, because it was bad for the department to have him on board as far as getting the job done for him and the DA and all these people that they wanted to screw with, but he used to fire liars because he knew that liars were bad for the other cops. It tends to diminish the reputation of police officers. You know, one of the campaigns that I'll be starting on this year, and I'll be working on very hard, is a campaign against lying cops. And the best evidence that I have is that it's a major problem in our society is the fact that you can walk up to any young person, and I don't care whether you find them on the street or in church or in school, it doesn't matter where you find them. You walk up to any young person and say, did you know that cops lie? And they will laugh at you. without exception, they will just laugh at you. And the reason that they laugh is because it is so clear that that's true. And you might as well ask them if the sky is blue. You know, you walk up and ask somebody if they knew the sky was blue, they'll laugh. And it's the same reason. And I think about where a society is going, where the young people in the society are convinced beyond reason that cops lie all the time about anything and everything they want. Where are we going with that? Where's that going to put us? I mean, I don't get that one. But I think I understand why it exists. I mean, exonerated, you got four eyewitnesses that testified that the guy lied. Three of them independent. I mean, I can understand why they might want to throw out my word against his, in spite of the fact I've never lied to him about anything. But three independent witnesses, one of them an officer of the court, wrote declarations and submitted them that this report is false.
Well, I think I can throw some light on the situation, Richard. You went into a drug dealer's den, to wit, a store that sells alcohol, one of the most lethal toxins, probably also sells an even more lethal toxin, nicotine. This police officer, attempting to respond to the crisis in health around these two drugs, is doing his best to discredit this kind of operation.
But the only drug that I was buying was sugar.
Sugar is a well-known cancer carcinogen and also causes tooth decay.
Well, no, it's the most addictive and commonly available drug of all. It also causes, I mean, come on, man. It causes psychic disturbances or psychiatric disturbances. How else do you expect explain Dan White? You know, Twinkies. You eat enough Twinkies, you go kill people, you're okay.
Twinkle, twinkle, little white. Well, that's another story.
But yeah, it's all the sugar drug. And I think when, you know, you're right. I shouldn't have been buying drugs.
I think that's the real moral here of the story. Thank you, Richard. I hope you keep us advised as to what the next chapter in this saga is.
Yeah, well, I will find out. Like I said, I'll find out how many of these complaints have been sustained because, of course, I'm going to sue the bejesus out of these assholes. I mean, of course, I'm going to sue
You'll be giving me my customary 10%.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Richard Quigley, freedom fighter in Santa Cruz County.
And that was indeed Richard, who has done numerous things essentially to defend his rights and to show others how to defend their rights against untoward police intrusion, of which I think he gave a perfect example if his account is accurate. And he also showed me several documents of other people who were swearing under oath in sworn affidavits that in fact he had essentially done nothing but gone into a store to buy something when he was harassed by this deputy. In the studio with me is my producer and also a video journalist in her own right, Becky Johnson. Hi, Becky.
Hi, Robert. Wow. that's kind of interesting about, you know, how the district attorney's office doesn't seem to sustain any complaints made by the sheriffs, regardless of how much evidence there is for those complaints.
Yeah, well, actually, I don't know what the stats are, and hopefully Richard will come up with them, but every complaint I've ever filed and I've ever heard filed has come up no sustained complaint. So I don't know. We'll find out, hopefully.
Yeah, that's what happened to me when I filed a complaint against Deputy Fitzgerald for basically assaulting me and grabbing my camera because he didn't like where I was standing. And I filed a complaint, and I had some pretty good eyewitnesses as well. And about a year later, I got a little letter from the district attorney's office saying...
Probably from the police chief.
It was a Santa Cruz deputy sheriff, so it was...
Yeah, the deputy sheriff. He doesn't usually get involved in this stuff.
Yeah, I guess it was the IA for the sheriff's department, and they told me that there was no problem. That I guess I was just imagining it.
No problem for the sheriffs. Yeah, I remember Deputy Fitzgerald. He was the same deputy who twice essentially assaulted a 59-year-old woman who was a medical marijuana user and also the head of Jane Kaiser was her name, and she was the head of Patient Inmates Rights Collective. And seized her marijuana, seized her card. This was after the passage of Proposition, 215. And so, I mean, it was doubly egregious. So the Sheriff's Department certainly has a long way to go. But will there be any kind of prosecutions for bad cops, either in the Santa Cruz Police Department or the Sheriff's Department, not while there's an Art Danner clone or someone worse than Art Danner in power there? And I guess that's what we're next going to turn to as we contact Attorney Kate Wells. And also, I guess you, Becky, you've got some information for us on that score. You want to run that by us?
Yeah, sure. We ran into District Attorney I guess she's an assistant district attorney, Patty Bazaar, and she had some interesting information. She said that Kate Canlis, who's the acting DA, has been passing around a petition around the district attorney's office from her peons, those people who are below her, and she has said that the petition, which basically says, I support Kate Canlis to be appointed the district attorney for the remainder of Art Danner's term, that she was sort of phrasing it in the, gee, I don't know, the department's in a state of flux, and there's so much, there's just the budget hasn't been settled in, and we're not even sure that your job position is going to be funded. But would you like to sign this petition supporting me for DA? Yeah.
So on the line with us, we have Attorney Kate Wells. Hi, Kate.
Hey, how you doing?
Not bad. I know we're interrupting your traditional Sunday morning sport here. We appreciate being able to do that. And of course,
halftime. So.
That's good.
Caught me at a good time.
So what do you think of this story that our producer has come up with, that actually both of us were witnesses to Patty Bazaar's concern? Does she have a legitimate concern? Is Kate doing a little proper politicking, or what's going on there?
Oh, well, I think it's business as usual for Kate Canlis. I think another illustration of why she is not going to get the job. I have... kind of some inside information that it appears that the board is leaning towards the fact that that no one inside that department could possibly pull it together in the manner that which the board wants it to be. So I think all of her politicking is just going to come back and bite her on the butt.
Really?
And it's not to mention how unethical it is. I mean, ridiculous.
In other words, it's inappropriate for a person to suggest that the folks should sign a petition for her under threat of losing their jobs.
That's pretty self-evident.
But,
you know, anybody who calls herself a lifelong Democrat and is married to Daryl Allen Gault has got a, you know.
That's sort of like a Rotkin progressive.
Yeah. Oh, my. Yeah. I think it's pretty interesting that...
Well, I know you've had a busy week. Is there anything new around civil rights that might affect poor people or that might be of interest to their general community that you want to bring forward for us?
Well, I guess I don't know whether you have heard the latest about the internal affairs complaint that Richard Quigley filed.
Well, he actually had an interview with Richard Quigley who did a very brilliant and articulate presentation talking about the... the deputy who, you know, held him in a squad car for half an hour, how you were a witness to this whole thing, how he filed two complaints, one simply for the behavior of the deputy, false imprisonment and intentional infliction of emotional distress and so forth, and then a second complaint for a false police report, and both of those complaints came back exonerated, indicating,
okay.
You know...
I didn't know if you'd...
No, I mean, but what's your perspective on all this?
My perspective on all of this, and I... also have some inside information here because I have some...
Well, you were a witness to some of it, certainly.
Well, not just that, but I have spoken with a couple of sheriffs that have been there a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that under Al Noren, this guy would have been fired in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
That Noren didn't think twice. You know, there's no love lost for Al Noren.
Mm-hmm.
However...
You're not a big Noren fan.
Well... You know, it's a credit to him that he didn't put up with any lying, and I guess the person that I talked to from the inside said that I asked what Tracy's motivation was for this, and he said that he thought it was just basically obliviousness. It wasn't anything intentional, but it. This whole incident got me to thinking about how my 18 years of being kind of a watchdog against the police abuses in Santa Cruz County has changed. My practice has changed. it used to be the very rare case was against a sheriff. It used to be that the sheriff's department was, for the most part, the ones you could count on for being legitimate. And I have now, well, I just served two more lawsuits against the county, against Steve Christensen and David Deverell, one lawsuit against both of them against Christensen, one of them against Deverell.
As referee Mulligan would put it, tell us, as he says to the police officers anyway, tell us the facts in the case.
Yeah. Well, in one of the cases, my client is a gentleman who's lived, owns his own home up in Boulder Creek and has lived there for quite some time. And the neighbor picked a feud with him, and actually the neighbor came out and shot his gun in his yard. And so my client called the police, and the police came out and cited the other guy, actually said that he had, and then suddenly the police were called out again, the sheriff's office was called out again, and evidently his neighbors accused him of doing something, and they actually busted into his house and arrested him and took him and his wife to jail for making making terrorist threats and for cultivation of marijuana. They found one marijuana plant in his closet.
Mm-hmm.
The court then, as a term of his OR, actually told him that he could not go home. And for 4 months, this is all over the holidays, and he had to find other place to live. The very interesting part of this little report is...
Who was the judge, Kate, who required this?
Several judges signed on to this. I think Kelsey was the original judge, and... he saw every judge in, you know, his case was transferred around quite a bit. But the interesting thing on this little report that Christensen filled out, oh, by the way, Christensen petitioned and got a bail increase to something like $500,000 or something based on these terrorist threats.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing about this little OR report is that they identify my client as, I'm not going to say his name right now because I don't have his permission, as so-and-so, a black man, and his wife, so-and-so, a white woman.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the Klan, I've heard, is still organizing in the hills, but we had complaints about that about a year ago, that kind of
shocking.
Racism.
Absolutely shocking. Now, the interesting thing is that the same officer, Deputy Christensen, we have also sued, oh, by the way, that part of the case was thrown out at the preliminary hearing against my client.
That part being?
Pardon?
That part being?
The part of terrorist threats.
Uh-huh.
Was thrown out by the judge, again Kelsey, at the preliminary hearing saying, this is ridiculous. This isn't come anywhere close to terrorist threats. This is just a civil dispute.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't stop him from issuing a restraining order, basically, from the court saying he couldn't go home. This was in November. The restraining order was not rescinded until March.
Why so long?
He was shuffled from judge to judge, and every judge just kept signing on to the same thing. It was finally due to Susan Jakubowski, a wonderful public defender who went to bat for him and said, this is ridiculous. This man has the right to go home. It's an outrageous case.
And you're suing, I assume, for every day he was kept away from his home.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this man had to find alternative living space. He had to pay for, you know, he lost his job while he was in jail. And, of course, the woman who who did all of this to him, his neighbor, works for the city of Santa Cruz, interestingly enough.
What a coincidence.
Isn't that interesting?
Of course, I don't suppose you want to name who she is.
No, not at this point, but at some point here in the future, I probably
it couldn't
will.
Be Cynthia Matthews, by any chance.
No.
Okay, just
wondering. Now, the other case I have is a case of a friend of mine, actually long-time friend of mine, who lives quite close to Mark Tracy, and he was bothered by the fact that some neighbors of his were parking a huge, big old semi in this, I mean, one of the big semis, and doing business, selling sod out of this truck right in their little residential neighborhood. And so he complained to the county two or three times, and of course, the people who were running this business had befriended Sergeant David Deverell. This was back when Deverell was, this all happened down in Aptos, was head of the sheriff's substation, and so...
Remind us about his kind of typical behaviors at that substation.
Boy. The word Nazi comes to mind every time I think
now,
about
now, I'm
Deverell.
Always being criticized for using the word Nazi. Now, surely you don't wish to call him some sort of SS stormtrooper.
Oh, my. Well, we have Sergeant David Deverell on videotape pointing his finger at Jerry Henry and saying, "You push my buttons and I'll show you what I can do, both legal and illegal, okay?" So that's Sergeant David Deverell. Okay, so at any rate, she had befriended Sergeant Deverell, and they had struck up a nice relationship. And the county had told my client that he needed to get pictures, photographs of this going on. So one particular day he left home and discovered that they were doing their business, so he went back and got his camera, and as he drove by, he took photographs of the business going on. Well, a little bit later on in the day, he hears this commotion at the top of the street, and he goes out to find this woman parked at the top of his driveway screaming at him, calling him pig and all kinds of ethnic slurs. He's Croatian by birth. Mm-hmm. You know, taking pictures of him, screaming and yelling and screaming and yelling. And so my client tries to speak with her. We have a neighbor, by the way, who witnessed all of this.
Mm-hmm.
He tries to speak to her civilly, and she just keeps on screaming at him. And so he finally just gives up and says, turns around and he says, "Well, if you really want a picture, take a picture of this," and basically mooned her.
Uh-huh.
He's in his own driveway.
Right.
And the pictures show, she did get pictures, the pictures show that his shirt was so long that it went way below his behind, and so mm-hmm. nothing showed at any rate. So she took off, and that evening he and his wife and son are sitting in front of the fireplace quietly. This all happened, by the way, within a week of each other, these two incidents. Guess who shows up at the door?
Christensen?
Deputy Christensen, who happens to be a good friend of Dave Deverell's and whose regular beat is San Lorenzo Valley. Certainly not Aptos.
And this happened in Aptos.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So he arrives at the door and wants to come in, and Milo lets him in, and they start talking, and next thing you know, they arrest Milo, takes him in his...
First rule, never let a police officer in your house.
Yeah, exactly, for terrorist threats. See, he didn't think he did anything wrong, so he did exactly the same thing in this case. Takes him to jail for terrorist threats, makes a bail increase request again to $150,000. Basically, Milo spent 4 days in jail, and then they prosecuted him.
Was there a stay-away order from his house?
No stay-away order from his house this time.
I can't understand. What would be the rationale for the first stay-away order from the house?
It is beyond me. I mean, after the judge ruled that this wasn't a terrorist threat and that this was a civil dispute, how the court could tell him he couldn't go home.
But even before, what would be the reason? Even if it were being tried as a terrorist threat, why would going home constitute some kind of danger to anybody?
Well, because of the neighbors, the one that's saying that
he made
a terrorist threat.
I see. Okay.
Right. So, at any rate, they prosecuted him... the second client vigorously until they finally, the DA finally figured out that this woman was lying through her teeth and dismissed the case against my client.
Did they prosecute the woman for perjury?
No.
Well, I guess perhaps she was never sworn under oath or something?
No, she never was. They just interviewed her.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the two latest cases against the county.
Wow, completely new to me. I know that you had a potential case of a woman who charged racism against Seaside Company guards. Did that case ever fizzle, or what happened to that one?
Well, I haven't filed it yet, but we still have time. It happened last summer, so we're...
Are you still persuaded there's credibility there?
Well, I'm still investigating.
What about the case of our famous and our very own homegrown fidget man, Shaws, and his concerns with the Seaside Company?
Well, we're still pursuing that case as well. That has been filed and is being pursued.
And what about your own, should we say, low-profile campaign to be appointed district attorney?
That's pretty funny.
Well, I know that you were at the investiture of Art Danner with a pie under your coat.
Oh, boy, yeah.
Actually, we thought of going to the Danner investiture, and I was going to wear a chef's hat and carry a pie high and say, pie for Judge Danner, pie for Judge Danner.
Well, you know what? I really think that this has probably been the best thing that ever could have happened, because what has happened is that Danner has had to publicly show his true color. And there is no way he's going to be reelected as judge. I am absolutely convinced of that. There are going to be several strong candidates against him. And
has a sitting judge ever been defeated here in Santa Cruz?
I don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I think that this whole mess with Hopkins and his attempt to try and control the DA's office, even as he sits on the bench, is great. He has finally let the public know what a scurrilous character he really is, and so now he's lost the DA-ship, and hopefully in another couple of years he'll be out of Santa Cruz altogether.
Now, you told us that Art has been recused from hearing criminal cases for the next year.
He's recused from hearing any criminal cases upon which he, of course, was DA when the case was filed.
The reason I ask is the first case under Judge Danner is actually, interestingly enough, the ticket gotten by QZ for sleeping outside after the December 8th ticket only on warning and after complaint guidelines by the city council.
Hmm.
And QZ, you know, found that the judge that was hearing his case was Judge Danner. And that sounded, I guess that's possible because it's not a... it's a city attorney case. It's not a district attorney case, right?
Yeah, he. I assume that he preempted then Mulligan.
He did, yeah.
Okay. So it was transferred up to.
You know, while we're at it, I have a rather bad tape of a conversation I had with you about a week ago, explaining why and how you were proceeding in this case of, I guess, Dennis, the car camper.
Dennis Ream, yeah.
Who is trying to, you know, defend his rights to be able to sleep at night. And you were explaining in that tape how not only do you have a peremptory challenge, one for any reason you can challenge a judge or a referee or a judicial officer, mm-hmm. and kick it to another court, but you were explaining that not only if you have a misdemeanor do you have a right to demand that a full judge and not a commissioner or a referee hear your case, but you were also saying that in infraction cases you believe there is a strong argument to be made that you can disqualify referee Mulligan or a commissioner if you want and require a full judge hear that case even without exercising your one peremptory challenge.
Yeah, I strongly, and I'm not sure what I said in that former interview, but yeah, I'm real strong on that belief, and
it's very important, I think, because it gives kind of two shots to the folks who are trying to make sure they can secure some kind of justice around this issue of human rights, the right to sleep at night, when we can't get the city council off its big tripartite duff, or is it quadripartite duff, to do anything about it.
Well, see, there's a different situation between being a traffic infraction, I think, and being an infraction that's not a traffic related.
Mm-hmm.
And it just may be that you are by contractually signing up with the DMV that you're agreeing to let a traffic commissioner hear the vehicle cases.
Mm-hmm.
However, there isn't any such. You're not signing away any such rights as far as the county ordinance infractions.
You're talking about the city ordinance.
And the city, exactly, city ordinance.
Of course, the claim, and I know we've done a lot of talking about take me to a magistrate, and if you sign your ticket, then only do so after you've ascertained that your only choice is to sign or go to jail and not be taken to a magistrate, to be booked, that is to say, and not be taken to a magistrate. But does signing your ticket, if I get a sleeping ticket and I sign my sleeping ticket after determining if they're going to take me to jail and book me if I don't, that doesn't obligate me to, or does that justify the referee Mulligan to hear the case, even though it's an infraction?
Absolutely not. For one thing, And this is maybe even more important than the issue of the preemption of the judge, is that I have done some research and found the actual legislative intent of the section where they say that the ticket becomes the complaint. In other words, you can't demur and demand a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
I have found the legislative intent behind that, and it is clear that you may plead to the ticket as a complaint, but if you demand a verified complaint, that they are required to do that.
And this is still another dimension, which in essence requires the district attorney's office to get involved.
Exactly.
So presumably poor Judge Danner will not be able to hear QZ's case if he demands a verified complaint, but it may be too late for that, right?
You can't plead. It has to be done at the very outset, at the pleading stage. And before you plead, you have to say, no, I'm not going to plead. I demur on the basis of the fact that this is not a valid complaint under the penal code.
And then that requires the district attorney, or is it the city attorney, one of the two, to file a verified
complaint.
Now, you tried this as attorney for Dennis, the van dweller.
Right.
And what was the consequence?
Well, he turned me down. And so, like I said, in the meantime, I've done some research and found the legislative intent, and it's my intent to go in next week when we have Dennis's trial and show the judge, ask the judge to take judicial notice of the legislative intent of this, and again ask that his plea be withdrawn and that we be provided with a verified complaint.
I mean, rather than trying to get a writ of mandate or something? Or?
Well, I'm going to give it a shot with him because he quoted some amorphous section of the vehicle code for the proposition that the ticket was a verified complaint. The penal code sections require that there certain things be in a complaint, and not only that, you know, first of all, why should anyone accept a complaint that is signed by the person who's going to be the witness against you?
And the prosecutor as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and what people should understand is if you go into a trial, let's say for a ticket for sleeping or a vehicular infraction, mm-hmm. in a Mulligan's court, you do not have the right to you don't have the right to an attorney. Of course, you don't have the right to attorney in any court, but you usually defend yourself, and the judge, or in this case, the referee, Mulligan, turns to the police officer, who is the person who not only is the witness, the complainant, but he's also the prosecutor in the situation. He shouldn't be allowed to be, because only the city attorney should be allowed to prosecute. But Mulligan will customarily allow him to argue, continue to ask questions of him after he's made his statement, look to him for, quote, the facts in the case. And so it really is quite a rigged game there in the basement of the county building. So I encourage all listeners, and you are listening, by the way, to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3, and I'm talking to attorney Kate Wells about matters legal and illegal. Do disqualify referee Mulligan if you get a ticket, if you really want any kind of semblance of a fair hearing. Not that the rest of the judiciary is remarkably fair, but I would say they're significantly fairer than referee Mulligan. Would you agree with that, Kate?
Absolutely. There's some safeguards. You have basically no rights in Mulligan's court, as you were witness to the other day, where Mulligan basically talked a young kid into waiving time because the officer didn't show up. Didn't really explain to the kid that if he didn't waive time, he was going to dismiss the ticket.
Waiving time means he persuaded the kid to give the court and the officer more time instead of simply saying, you didn't show, you lose, dismiss the ticket, please.
Right,
and
he was so
way.
Artfully wove his little story that the kid didn't understand what he was doing. He had no idea what he was doing. So, you know, that's I have one other thing to talk about, and then I got to get back to the game because it's an exciting game.
Uh-huh. Go for it.
And that is, I had a...
Before you do, though, tell us when your trial is this next week.
I don't know. I'd have to go get my calendar and...
If anyone's interested in attending the trial of Dennis with an actual real attorney defending him in a vehicular sleeping case, give a call to me at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I'll put that message on my machine, Kate, once you give me the information.
Okay.
Go ahead with your story, then.
Yeah, I had another multiple trials in a case of one homeless person who has failed the attitude test with the SCPD and has been given by his estimates, at least 10 citations for various things, but mostly for riding his bicycle with headphones. He got his first headphone ticket, obscure vehicle code section, and since then has gotten some 4 or 5 more.
I recognize who it is, and I think he wouldn't mind us mentioning his name because he's been on the show. You're talking about
Oscar McMurray.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the subsequent tickets, he's either had his headphones around his neck or maybe one headphone in, and the code section actually requires both headphones to be in. So he was contesting 5 or 6 of these citations this week in court. We had a court trial.
Before Referee Mulligan?
Yeah, no. In front of Commissioner Salazar.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 of them were dismissed, and I think 3 of them he was convicted. But I just think it's real interesting to note that some 4 SCPD officers showed up to testify against him at these infraction trials.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, getting 1.5 hours for the whole time that they're testifying, a 4-hour chunk, more than what they're testifying for, a 4-hour chunk of overtime.
So it's actually a profitable business the SCPD officers.
Writing bad tickets is a very profitable business.
You know, I noticed that in Mulligan's court, the place was packed with cops. The only cop who didn't show up was kick 'em while they're down, Clark, as I remember.
And Officer Connor, who was I was there for my client who was given a ticket for not having registration and insurance on his go-kart in Capitola.
Boy, that creative, fine, revenue-enhancing schemes for this county.
I was actually looking forward to it. I was real sorry that the Capitola PD officer Connor didn't show up.
Oh, dear.
But, oh, well.
Are you still interested in helping out folks with camping tickets? I know you're very busy, and you have stated at some of these task force meetings that you thought, you know, or the one task force meeting you were at, I guess the homeless advocates meeting, and we're going to be playing a segment of that later in the show, that you would like to in some way be a resource for folks who are faced with tickets for sleeping after 11 o'clock at night.
Well, yeah, and I have to, you know, obviously I have to portion my time. And right now, I have to make some money because I'm I have no income coming in because I've taken so many of these cases in the last couple of months here. And I also want to leave myself open to have the time to constitutionally challenge the sleeping ban if we need to, which
I think we probably will.
Probably we are going to need to, which is going to be a considerable amount of effort for
any word on other attorneys offering any kind of assistance to you in that, or is it still a lonely quest?
Still a lonely quest.
Okay, well, attorneys that are listening out there, Kate Wells and the community of Santa Cruz, not just the homeless community, but the rest of us who want our consciences redeemed, do need your help. If you can, give a call to 423-HUFF, and we'll give Kate the word that there are other attorneys of conscience who are willing to put some time into this.
That'd be nice.
Anything else you want to say, Kate?
No, other than Happy New Year, and keep up the good fight.
Hey, and you'll be passing on to us your trial date with Dennis.
Yeah.
For those who want to pursue this case of a man in his van getting getting the word to get out of town. In
he was basically parked over there where all the semis park by Harvey West Park. Semis park, of course, and sleep in there with impunity. I have no problem with that. And the holidays, the big motorhomes come in and that sort of thing, and of course they don't bother them. But yeah, this is the famous case of the
rich vehicles no, poor vehicles yes on
yes,
the tickets,
and,
right?
Well, not only that, is the camper shell that he was in was completely enclosed. No way for the officer to have seen him or know that he was sleeping. And
but the officer had super acute hearing. He could tell there was
snoring.
A snore in somewhere, and he was able to, that officer really is was on the ball.
Yeah.
Or something.
Well, yeah, or something. At any rate, so that's next week.
Well, this brief interview has gone for 30 minutes. I want to thank you, Kate, for taking valuable weekend time out.
No problem.
Thanks
Happy
a lot.
Happy MLK Day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And, of course, that was attorney Catnip Kate Wells, or sometimes Catnap Kate Wells, as I playfully call her. She has been involved a great deal in trying to help folks accused of preposterous, quote, crimes, and help them work their way through the maze of the legal system, and indeed is now kind of trying, I say kind of because she needs more legal support to do it, but to engineer some kind of significant state and or federal challenge to the sleeping ban law. We actually had a lot of sleeping ban cases a couple years ago, as you may remember, in the aftermath of the 1996 City Hall sleepers protest in front of City Hall, where literally hundreds of tickets were issued to people who, under the leadership of Dan Hopkins, dragged... Rotkin, or Riot Act Rotkin, as I call him, for his preferences in terms of dealing with dissenters and protesters. They were unable to secure a change in the law at that time through the courts because the courts are fundamentally beholden to and apparently deeply enmeshed with the local establishment. Judge Kelly, Kangaroo Kelly as I call him, both in a friendly fashion and also with a pointed edge, Kangaroo Kelly ruled that it's okay to arrest people for sleeping at night because, after all, they could always sleep during the day sometime, so it's not an unconstitutional infringement. Anybody who tried that on his family would find themselves at the business end of a lawsuit or a court order faster than you can, say, Jack Robinson. But if you're outside and poor, Judge Kelly apparently takes a different perspective on the case. But that doesn't mean that ends the situation. There is some political momentum in this community to change the sleeping ban, to repeal the sleeping ban sections of the camping ban, although it must be made very clear to all of you out there that there is no real clarity that that is what is happening with this current so-called revisiting the camping ban ordinance that's going on with the City Council's task force on the camping ban. And indeed, it is sort of a bad thing that the media and the City Council have led us to believe that something like that is happening. No, what is really happening is this task force is meeting and talking mostly to business people and residents, and they're also talking to other people, but they seem to have their serious concern is with Downtown Association, who they met with Friday, the downtown neighbors, actually they met with them about a month ago, and the neighbors had a big meeting on Thursday in which they essentially affirmed the status quo, though there was significant dissension, and we're going to be talking about that later in the show, hopefully. The task force, the danger here is there's a huge public meeting coming up on January 25th. On January 25th at 6:30 to 9:30 in Loudoun Nelson, there's going to be a public forum. And because of all the fear that Catherine Byers' task force is arousing among merchants and residents and conservative folks, these conservative opponents of homeless rights, these defenders of the camping ban status quo, are likely to show up in great numbers, whereas those who want to change the law, somehow deluded that the City Council is doing that or has done that, won't show up at all. So it is very important that many, many people get to the Monday, January 25th meeting. That's the day before the next City Council meeting. That's at 6:30 to 9:30 in Loudoun Nelson. Really important to get lots and lots of folks, particularly homeless folks, talking about why and how the current law affects them and why and how they need it changed. Really, really important. And there's going to be a whole series of upcoming meetings around the... Well, it's called the task force. Their next official meeting is, I believe, Wednesday, January 20th, and I believe that's from 3 to 4 on the second floor of the library where they're meeting with law enforcement. And that could be very significant because law enforcement has given out some pretty questionable statistics around camping tickets for the last year and also sleeping tickets, because some of them are back. Well, I'm not quite sure what the majority is. We don't have the split, but certainly a significant number of those are not for having a campground and an established campsite and a tent and a stove and so forth, but rather for simply sleeping or covering up with a blanket in some part of town. in a town, as we know, that has no legal spaces for 500 to 1,500 homeless people to sleep in, or is it 300 to 1,300 if you actually subtract the 200 spaces that there is for emergency shelter? In any case, the question is, have the supporters of ending the sleeping ban been duped into believing everything is fine, while the opponents have been freaked out by this supposed complete examination of the camping ban that's going on, when in fact, it doesn't look like there's any real sincere will yet on the city council, at least certainly not among a majority of the city council members, or most important, on the person of the mayor, Mayor Catherine Byers, to make real changes. Byers began this whole campaign by announcing she wanted to, quote, lower the fines. It's like saying, let's only beat up the activists with a few blows. Let's only go after the homeless by hitting them a few times instead of the six or seven times. Hitting them for what? Fining them, harassing them, waking them up, in essence, sleep-depriving and torturing people for what? To enforce a sleeping ban because of apprehensions of some people in the downtown area. It's similar to ruling a whole part of the city ruling a whole part of the city not to be allowed, let's say, for black people or for Hispanic people. It's a form of segregation of a kind. And I think, as one activist, Sherry Connable, put it so very well, you would not go to the neighborhoods in the 50s to ask them to end segregation before you took action. You would not go to the voters to ask for a change in the schools. These are human rights. These are rights of conscience that are not up for that kind of vote. Yet ironically, even though we have had a whole election around this issue in November, which found every organization virtually that endorsed the people who won by the landslide, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, also endorsed ending the sleeping ban sections of the camping ban. But that hasn't happened. Instead, they're talking about endless hearings not to deal with the sleeping ban, but to deal with the larger camping ban, which of course complicates, confuses, delays, and also compounds the fear in this situation. It's ironic. It both compounds the fear of the opponents, and so they rush in and are likely to be the largest voices on January 25th, the loudest and the strongest voices, but it also helps to compound the complacency of folks who are hoping that there be a change in the sleeping ban. And when they hear the entire camping ban is being examined, they think, oh, well, then they're surely going to do something about the sleeping ban. We can just sit back and relax. Well, folks, you cannot sit back and relax. What's happening here is unclear. But we are worried, some of us, that Mayor Byers' commitment to any real change in this law is very, very limited. At least, she hasn't made it clear that there is any real commitment even to decriminalizing sleeping, whereas the three other council members that were elected, Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, have at one time or another said they would like to see sleeping decriminalized. And Byers years ago made such statements. Recently, all Byers has said is she wants to see fines decreased. She wants to see people found ways to do community service without paying large community service costs. Not bad. I'm glad that she likes that idea. But there's no commitment to the basic principle that a person has a right to sleep at night. And if there is no commitment on her part, then perhaps we need an entirely new strategy. We certainly cannot sit back while the three new council members rely on her and her old guard expertise, her old guard philosophy, her old guard connections to pass any real changes in the sleeping ban. It's just not a safe, not even a likely thing to happen. You know, in a way, it would have been better if a conservative had been appointed to this little task force. On the task force is Mayor Byers, Councilmember Crone, and Councilmember Sugar. And Sugar, of course, was the most ardent advocate of immediate change. Actually, he just wanted to protect people while the process of discussion was taking place, and he had to push for a larger change because the city attorney, Ann Rotkin, tried to tie him down and tackle him, and he wouldn't let himself be tackled. Instead, of course, he got, as I said, cut off at the knees by Catherine Byers, who did the dirty work of Rotkin and Barisoni for them by not allowing his health and safety ticket only on health and safety provision to pass at City Council back on December 8th. But we have Sugar, Crone, and Byers on the subcommittee. It would have been better if someone other than Byers, a conservative, had been appointed to the subcommittee. Because that way, first of all, it would be fairer. You need to have a conservative on there to have some kind of balance. And it's fair to have two liberals to one conservative, because that really is kind of the makeup of the city council now after the election. And certainly, that's the sentiment in the community, where 61 to 63% of the people came out in favor of the new candidates and completely dumped Karen Gillette's candidate, Linda Steinau, completely dumped Jane Walton, and completely dumped Canfield's banker, Ron Quartararo. Those people were dumped. They were, you know, rejected. So it would have been better to have a little subcommittee with two liberals and one conservative, so that the third liberal, who's the real liberal, Fitzmaurice, could actually be involved in this process, if only from a distance. Fitzmaurice has not, I should point out, attended one of these task force meetings. He's been very generous of his time with us. Well, that's a little too generous for me to say that, but he has come to several meetings, one of them at very short notice, after Keith Sugar got up and walked out on a meeting a week ago because I insisted on writing something down about my own thoughts. He didn't like me lifting a pencil. Fitzmaurice came in and willingly talked to us for about an hour. Unfortunately, we didn't learn much from him, and we still can't get anything other than the fact that he is seeking a community consensus. Again, seeking a community consensus on an issue like the sleeping ban is really playing a dangerous game. I mean, I think what you need to do is you need to acknowledge that basic human rights have to be upheld, that these are not a matter of vote, that they were voted on anyway, even though they weren't a matter of vote, and don't drag out the whole process and sort of rouse up the bigots. I mean, that seemed to me to be pretty obvious, but apparently that's not what the city council is doing. And there's, interestingly enough, one point on which those of who favor changing the sleeping ban sections or even the entire camping ban, and those who oppose any changes in the camping ban, agree on. That there's one point in which I, Karen Gillette, Robert, what the heck is his name, one of the heads of the Downtown Neighbors, who wrote such a nasty editorial in last Sunday's Sentinel, and the head of the Downtown Association, all these folks agree that the city council's attempt to, quote, simply examine the camping ban without getting specific about what they're really doing is completely confusing and requires them to kind of mobilize fully against anything. So instead of looking for a compromise, they mobilize to fight the entire effort. And so doing, one has to wonder either at Catherine Byer's wisdom or at her sincerity. It may be a simply inept political judgment on her part, or it may be a Machiavellian desire to get this issue behind her by having it defeated. You know, that doesn't seem like the Catherine Byers I used to know, but Catherine Byers is not merely a liberal person. She has also done many, many bad things and gone along with the Rotkin majority. She was elected in the Rotkin majority's election period when both Rotkin, Matthews, and Hernandez were swept into power in 1996. She's really sort of a middle-of-the-road person in many ways. And though she's stood with Celia Scott on a number of important issues and is to be commended for that, and I do commend her for that, I note, for instance, that Phil Baer didn't get her vote on any commission when the commission votes came up last Tuesday, which I thought was an incredible disgrace. And for those of you who don't know, Phil Baer is the man in the Beach Flats who saved the Tidelands. Tidelands are going to be given away by the Rotkin Council without any kind of discussion. He raised the issue. He showed that the community and the charter of the city council and the city of Santa Cruz requires that they can't give away those tidelands without a vote of the population. And they did it anyway, illegally, and he raised such a cry that whole thing was reversed through the election and through the first substantive vote on the city council on December 8th. And how did they reward him with that? He got one vote in his request for a seat on one of these commissions. He got one vote for the Parks and Rec. Disgraceful. But part of that is because Phil Baer is a maverick. Phil Baer is a man who stands up. Well, I put it this way. I wrote him a card recently that said something to the effect of, to the one who stood alone that brought the community together, because that's what he did. And you've often heard Phil Baer on this station talking about the beach flats and the impact of bulldozing all those houses, what that would have done in terms of creating more homeless people, particularly among Hispanic people, people low income who already have a number of strikes against them. This is a man who should have been rewarded and not punished. And this current city council just completely passed him by. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Don't pass us by. Join us. We have open lines here at the studio, 427-3772. And I know you're getting tired of hearing my voice, so let me give you a little musical interlude. Let's hear Kristen Lems. Then we can get back. And, before the musical interlude, let's have a little phone interlude.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert Bernard.
Hi, Bernard. Been listening to the show?
Yes. How are you doing?
I'm okay. My voice is still here.
Are we on the air?
We are on the air.
Oh, good. I just wanted to urge, you know, my listeners, you know, and people that feel strongly, you know, to write a letter, you know, to the Santa Cruz Sentinel, to the Media Center, and to the City Council, you know, telling them about your opposition to the sleeping ban. This would be very valuable at this point.
I think by Media Center, that's actually the address of the City on a Hill. I think you're talking about
the
Santa Cruz Sentinel, the City on a Hill, and then the Santa Cruz City Council.
That is true.
And how can people get those addresses if they want them?
How can they get them?
I guess you can
call information.
You can look in the phone book, I guess, but
or in the newspapers.
I guess you could also. I mean, do you have a phone number, Bernard?
I have them, but they're in the other room. I can go get them.
No, no, no. I don't mean on the air. I mean, can people call you if they want to get these addresses?
Sure, they can call you. You know, either one.
Right, they could call either of us. I know that you've been working hard. This is sort of a letter campaign. We haven't seen much in the way of letters in favor of human rights around the sleeping ban in the Sentinel. I know that.
Right. Well, yeah, as long as, you know, the letters are going to hit City Council, I mean, they too have some, you know, more value. There's no guarantee that either one of those sources are going to print them, but hopefully they'll print a few if enough people send them.
People can write a sort of a letter and then sort of slightly change the heading and send the same letter to City Council. You can write a letter to the Sentinel and then CC a copy of it to the City Council.
That is true.
And similarly, you can do that with City on a Hill. If you're writing a letter to the Sentinel, my advice is don't make it any longer than 200 words, and be very careful that it's 200 words or less, because they will allow favored writers to write more, but if you're not considered to be in with the existing Sentinel line, then you'll get aced because of the 200-word maximum.
That's true. By the way, you know, you were thinking it was Robert DeFreitas. That was the
Thank
person
you.
That's name you were
Robert
thinking
DeFreitas
of
Robert DeFreitas is the head of the Downtown Neighbors.
Right.
Who had such a nasty editorial in the last Sunday Sentinel.
Right. Perhaps the Santa Cruz Sentinel will let you write an editorial, Robert.
Or perhaps they'll let you write an editorial, Bernard.
Well, I don't know if I could be as eloquent as you, but, you know.
I know you've been doing a lot of work. Are you still doing tabling downtown?
No, I haven't done tabling in a few days because I've been really real busy with work.
Are you inviting people to join you with that, or is that sort of something you're working more with the letter writing stuff?
I'm working more with the letter writing stuff now, but I would hope other people could take on the task of tabling.
Sounds good. Now, I know that you've been
especially getting people to come out to the April 25th meeting. I mean, January 25th.
April's a ways, but January 25th, yeah, I know. Well, there are a couple of other meetings coming up, too. I'm going to dig into my bag after this next musical interlude and read what the next task force meetings are of the City Council's task force on the camping ban. I know you went to this Downtown Neighbors meeting. Any report from that meeting as to what you thought was going on there?
Well, I thought that there was a half-hearted... I didn't see the business people, you know, come out, you know, and fully slam damn homeless people. However, I felt that there was some type of reaching out, although very, very light. Light. I mean, they were talking about more porta toilets. And
are you talking about the meeting in the library with the Downtown Business Association?
Yeah.
I was actually asking about the Downtown Neighbors.
Well, the leadership, the steering committee on that, you know, really doesn't give a damn about people that don't have any resources, such as homeless people.
Mm-hmm.
And what I thought was very interesting, that they really... really didn't even want to put their findings, you know, against. I mean, the steering committee came out for the status quo, don't change anything. But they really didn't even want to put those findings to the rank and file that were there. In fact, you know, it was outsiders that spoke up that they should take a vote, which they finally did, and 8 people voted against it. But I don't know how many people voted for it. Do you know, Robert?
You know, I'm not sure, because they didn't actually give the number, but I counted 12 to 15 people, I think, who voted for it, although it may have been slightly more. There was quite a number of people in that room. We're talking about a meeting of the Downtown Neighbors, which is an association of people who are kind of in the Loudoun-Nelson area, and they had their meeting on Thursday night from 7 to 8:30. They were very rigid on their time constraints, and I think that I wasn't sure why they were so rigid. In fact, I heard complaints from some of the Downtown Neighbors that the steering committee and the coordinator, who had already decided they wanted to keep the camping ban just the way it was, and they wanted everyone to phone in and write in and so forth, they didn't really give a lot of time to the issue, I felt, even when people were obviously not finished talking about it. And they kind of proposed the same old myths that, oh, if you let people sleep, then they're going to crap all over your front yard, and they're going to piss on the sidewalk, and they're going to rob your house and deal drugs to your children and all this kind of thing, and drop needles in the sand. And, you know, it's a series. It almost sounds like Nazi propaganda from the early 30s, which is, you know, this attempt to frighten people into the belief that there has to be a police state solution to things really, you know, raises my hackles, that's for sure. But I think there was also a lot of sentiment in the other direction, and it was clear that the Downtown Neighbors, like the Downtown Association the next day, were frightened by the city council's refusal to talk about a very specific solution like we proposed, which is simply to end the sleeping sections of the camping ban in some areas of the city, and probably non-residential, non-beachfront, non-downtown areas that would actually have no impact on that particular area that where the Downtown Neighbors live, or the Downtown Association, where the downtown businesses do their work. And so there wasn't any real discussion of the real issue, which we've been, of course, pushing around for a year, which is the sleeping ban repeal, not the camping ban repeal, which is something bigger and broader and really requires a lot of careful discussion. And
which really isn't even our issue very much.
Not really. I mean, I think we need campgrounds, and I think there should be places, but no one's suggesting that camping per se be completely unlimited, except that seems to be what the city council is raising as a specter, so that will bring out all the right-wingers and all the bigots and all the frightened people and just people who have legitimate concerns, you know, about what, you know, what are they doing there. And our people, you know, who somehow will think that the city council is just going to roll right ahead with a good proposal, we'll, you know, stay at home, or else they'll be so busy looking for a place to sleep because they have no amnesty, no moratorium that's in force, that they won't be able to come anyway. Anyway, I'm talking on your time there, Bernard.
Well, there was also one other interesting myth that really flowed in that meeting, in my opinion, was that the steering committee really put this idea out to the rank and file, you know, well, you know, nobody really bothers the sleepers unless it's complaint driven. That's a real, and that was really a myth, you know.
That's what the police department is claiming.
I know, and it just is not true.
Well, it certainly doesn't jibe with what I hear from homeless people. You know, I mean, maybe the police department isn't informing the homeless people, but I always ask someone whenever I get a sleeping ticket, did the police officer tell you there was a complaint? Did you ask if there was a complaint? You know, what did he say? And generally what they tell you is it's just illegal to sleep, you know, and that's true, and they are enforcing the law, but it is kind of disingenuous for them to claim that they're enforcing it only on a complaint-driven basis, which was what the police department claimed a week and a half ago at one of the task force meetings, and they presented this big chart. I know those of you who saw the city council meeting on Tuesday would see it on the wall. It has a bunch of dots all over the city as to where they're giving out tickets. And they claim, you know, their ticketing essentially is 80% complaint-driven for the police department, although the Parks and Rec didn't clarify that, and they had a lot of tickets to come through the Rangers. And they also, I mean, there are some definite real problems with their stats. One of them was, for the month of December, they claim that only one ticket has been given out by the police department, when we know of at least one ticket, and the fellow who was ticketed said that five other tickets were given out by the same officer, Officer Escalante, on that evening by the officer's own report. And we're trying to look into that to get some harder evidence. But even when we presented this evidence to the task force, even when you, Bernard, as I remember, presented petitions with 250 signatures or more, begging the task force to protect homeless people during this whole camping ban discussion so that they would suspend the sleeping ban only during the period of this discussion. They would stop prosecuting people for tickets so they wouldn't have to worry about warrants if they come to these meetings, so they would open some kind of shelter. You know, you got essentially, oh gosh, I'm sorry, Bernard, we're not going to do that. And they didn't, not a word was heard about shelter at the last city council meeting.
Right, right. I guess I just couldn't convince them, Robert.
Well, I think we're going to listen to some of the things you had to say. We have a few oral communications excerpts. We should be playing that in the hour ahead. And I want to thank you for calling. Is there more you want to say?
Yes. Do you mind if I talk about Abba Jamal for a moment?
Sure, go ahead.
Just want to remind, you know, my friends that we are reaching critical stages now. And it would be really good if you called Sam Farr's office, you know, and demand, you know, that his office stands for justice on that case. And then also on January 18 at 6:30 p.m., they're going to have some documentaries at Loudon Nelson Center around his case, especially the airing of what the 2020 has done, their hit piece on that. Please help him, too, because it's critical.
Yeah, Mumia Abu-Jamal, A Case for Reasonable Doubt, according to the flyer we have here in the studio, is going to be shown Monday, January 18th, Loudon Nelson Center, which is at 301 Center Drive, for those of you who don't know, which is at the corner of Laurel and Center. There'll be donations accepted, but no one will be turned away. And for more information, call the Santa Cruz Coalition to Free Mumia at 421-9794. Does that do it?
Yes, thank you, Robert.
Thanks, Bernard.
Bye.
It was 60 years ago an amendment was proposed to make the law state men and women equal. But little did we know just how long the fight would go, and even now we're working on its sequel. So no more debate, because we can't wait. We demand equality today, and it's fight we must to make the law just. Here's your part. E-R-A, E-R-A, E-R-A. Let's do it again. E-R-A, E-R-A, E-R-A. Well, I'm only Adam's rib. Keep me safe within my crib. Miss Shifty cries while working women labor. Any girl who needs to work should find a man to put her through law school. And if she don't know her place, who cares what they pay her? We do. So no more debate, because we can't wait. We demand equality today, and I mean today. And it's fight we must to make the law just. Shout it. E-R-A, E-R-A, E-R-A. Let's hear it louder. E-R-A, E-R-A, E-R-A. Said the man who's been laid off, how can I support this stuff? The boss tells me you'll make more competition. She said, find work if you can, but not just cause you're a man. Let's work side by side in factory and kitchen. So no more debate, because we can't wait. We demand equality today, and we're gonna get it. And it's fight we must to make the law just. Shout it. E-R-A, E-R-A, E-R-A. Said the sergeant with a sneer, well then tell me something, dear. Are you willing to be drafted with the others? Well, she answered, yes and more. I will not support your war. I will resist and fight beside my brothers. So no more debate, because we can't wait. We demand equality today. And I mean yesterday, in fighting we must to make the law just. Shout it. E-I-E-R-A, E-R-A. Your solo. All right, now the day is close at hand, that across this lovely land, those who try to keep us down will be defeated in November. So help us speed the day, shout the word, it's ERA, till the era of equality is greeted. So no more debate, because we can't wait. We demand equality today. And it's fine, we must, to make the law shout.
Shout it!
ERA, ERA, ERA.
You're beautiful again.
ERA, ERA, ERA. So let's have no more debate, because we won't wait. We demand equality today. To make the law just shout it, ERA, ERA, ERA.
A little louder,
ERA, ERA, ERA.
So they'll hear you everywhere,
ERA, ERA, ERA.
Them were the days, 1981-82, when folks were still fighting for the ERA. And hopefully that time will come again when there will be a real determination to equalize rights for everybody, women and men, rich and poor. We're kind of going through a slump here, have been for a while. And don't slump, but raise up and rise up and give us a call here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's what you're listening to, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobes Peer Robert Norse. This is Bathrobes Peer's Broadsides, Civil Rights for the Poor. We're on every Sunday, 11 to 1:30, and every Thursday, 6 to 8 in the evenings. We consider issues of civil rights on the streets. And we... Whoa, looks like an incoming call here. Let's see what we got.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert. This is Vinny.
Hey, Vinny.
How you doing?
And good, good, good. Yourself?
Not bad. Just waking up.
I talked to you earlier. I saw you, last I saw you, you were stalking out of a meeting of the downtown neighbors.
So. Yeah, that's right. That's kind of where I called. I heard the last caller. And, I sat through that meeting, holding my tongue most of the time, you know, gritting my teeth very, very heavily. But the term kept coming through my head when I was listening to the people speaking at the meeting was economic racism. I heard you earlier make a correlation between the civil rights movement in the 60s and how you wouldn't go to the businesses, or you wouldn't go to the areas where, you know, where segregation was occurring, and ask them for their permission to desegregate. And that's a very good analogy, I think. And that's kind of the term that was going through my mind the whole time at that meeting. I mean, you hear people; these are well-off people. They own their homes. You know, they have decent jobs. They really have no concerns in life as to becoming homeless. And you know, they're sitting there trying to make policy decisions on people who obviously, you know, don't have an avenue, don't have a place to sleep, and it's wrong. It's very wrong-headed. And I kept hearing people make this analogy between drug dealing and homelessness, and I for one don't see it. I for one just do not. All kinds of people are homeless. People that, you know, are trying to escape abusive situations and leave their house, need a safe place to go. And after 11, there is no safe place to do that. You know, there's all kinds of similar situations where you could find yourself on the streets, and through no fault of your own, really. I mean, you read the headlines in the paper and you hear about downsizing all the time, and people are out on the streets all the time, more and more, and with welfare cuts and food stamp being cut, it's like it's a really bad situation in this country and in this county particularly. And these people don't take that into any consideration. You know, it's like it made me very frustrated, you know, to sit there listening through some of that stuff at that meeting.
Well, I know that, and I think I mentioned this to you, that one woman who had complained about people crapping on her front yard and so forth, and somehow, I'm not sure, you know, linking this to homeless people, you know, no one asked her, was it a homeless person that you saw crapping? Did you then go and ask that 24-hour bathrooms or be opened up or the porta-potties be installed in that area? You know, she simply kind of, you know, dropped this turd into the into the room for us to, you know, to deal with, you know, somehow immediately directly smearing homeless people with it. And who knows, I'm sure, you know, homeless people do crap where they can.
Sure,
because you've got no choice. And in some cases people crap because they are irresponsible. You know, I don't deny that either.
But you know what, Robert, there's a lot of bars downtown too that are open till 2 in the morning, and people leave the bars and they go to the bathroom on people's front lawns too. So it's not just a homeless problem, it's just a bathroom problem.
Sure, and it's also a tourist problem as
well. Exactly.
you know, I mean, this city makes a lot of its money from tourism. I don't know what percentage, but, you know, that's the big draw. That was the big argument for expanding the whole boardwalk area and giving away land to Canfield. You know, and it's true. This is a tourist-run town, I guess a tourist and university town. So people need to acknowledge that and deal with it instead of scapegoating, hiding their eyes, sticking their heads in the sand, and sort of reciting these rote lines. But what I wanted to say was, even though, and I talked to you about this earlier, I'm kind of saying this for the benefit of the audience out there, which is that the same woman who expressed this concern, and she was very nice to me, she gave me her chair to sit in, she insisted I sit down and so forth, and this is, I was kind of one of the few people in the room, along with yourself, although there were a number who spoke up about the rights of people to sleep, and that the issue was not the camping ban, really. The issue was the sleeping sections of the camping ban, and mostly and almost entirely in other parts of town. That we weren't talking about lifting either the camping ban or even the sleeping ban in the Loudoun-Nelson area.
Right.
So really the whole thing was a complete red herring, and one wasn't sure what these people on the steering committee who were so determined to get all the downtown neighbors mobilized to go down and insist on keeping the camping ban citywide everywhere were thinking of. I mean, it would seem to me that if you keep the camping ban on citywide, that people will continue to be disrespectful of neighborhoods because there are no legal places to be, so why not be disrespectful wherever you happen to be rather than go to a legal place?
Right.
I mean, I don't know. But anyway, this woman, when she saw you leave the room, as I told you before, she raced after you, and I wasn't quite sure what happened. Then she came back and she said, she asked me, do you know his name? I really felt bad because he didn't get a chance to speak, really, and I don't like the way the meeting is being conducted. So there were a number of people, herself included, who had some concerns, who expressed what I feel is some really, really inappropriate comments in some sense. And that you can talk about people crapping in your yard, but you have to immediately say, let's deal with that problem. Let's not necessarily, I mean, is this connected with camping or sleeping in some other part of the city, or is it connected with something else? And she didn't say that, but again, the chair kept a pretty tight rein on the meeting, I thought. Perhaps much too tight for my taste. And he obviously had a preconceived opinion.
The whole thing was rigged, I think. I mean,
yeah.
They had their notion set before they even discussed anything. They were determined to, you know, bring forth the downtown neighbors' support to the status quo from the beginning, right from the very beginning. And it was even in the agenda, you know, that we received at that meeting. So they didn't even really, the discussion was almost a moot point, you know, it was for show, I think, mostly. And then they were ready to move forward without even having a consensus on it.
Exactly. And some of the neighbors, of course, were not ready to move forward, and I know one man, Eric Gross, who's an activist and a downtown neighbor, suggested that there was no consensus except on it. There was consensus on issues that crime was bad, should be dealt with, and public urination and defecation should not be, you know, should be addressed in terms of public facilities, and, you know, drug dealing should be dealt with. But there was no consensus on sleep and criminalizing poor people there, and so that should be passed aside. And I think people started to agree with that, and then somewhere in that group, I'm not sure who did, somebody called for a vote, and we got this essentially two-for-one supporting keeping the camping ban citywide.
Right.
Which I really think is unfortunate, and I got up this morning to kind of write a letter to the downtown neighbors, which I'm hoping to have out in a couple of days, requesting that they revisit that issue, as Catherine Byers might put it.
Yeah.
And you, Vinny, you have a show, and you bring up issues around homeless rights and around police misconduct. When is that show?
I have actually two shows. Wednesday night at 11 p.m. Sound like we're getting some static through the phone there.
A little bit. I think we're okay now, though.
Wednesday's at 11. I've been primarily lately just playing music on that show because it's so late at night. And I happen to be working now on Wednesdays as well, so I don't have much time to prepare. But on Fridays, I'm doing a show from 12 to 2. And actually, that time might change. That's coming up. I'm going to be probably doing a different time slot in the next coming week. So, yeah, kind of up in the air because my schedule's changing at work, and I may end up on the air actually on Sundays after the Little Red Hen show. So I think it probably in about 2 weeks I'll start doing Sundays.
We can give them a double whammy.
Yeah, and I cover a lot of stuff as far as news goes. I cover the world of micro radio and different issues around the country. Lately, you know, I've been trying to get more stuff off the internet, but
Any update on micro radio? I know there was a considerable scare about two or three weeks ago that Free Radio Santa Cruz was going to be hit by feds closing us down.
Yeah, as far as that goes, I think they're kind of backing off right at the moment because the commission chair, William Kennard, he's the chairman of the FCC, has been really pushing for some sort of legalized low-power movement, low-power service for this country, and they're actually discussing the issue January 29th at their open meeting. It's open to the public. Unfortunately, it's conducted in Washington, D.C., so it makes it very difficult to get there, but they are going to be proposing some notice of proposed rulemaking on low-power FM, which means basically that it's a notice of possibly making a rulemaking sometime in the future. So it's still, technically, underground, illegal, whatever, and there's always that threat that they could still move in on stations, and particularly us at Free Radio here.
Have other stations in the last couple of weeks been busted?
I haven't heard anything as far as 1999 is concerned. The last real high-profile bust that I'm aware of was in Gainesville, Florida, at the very end of November. They seized equipment. They, went in, busted in off when they weren't even broadcasting. This is a station that only operates four nights a week at various hours. And at the time, they weren't even on the air. A very similar raid to the one in Philadelphia last summer. They weren't on the air at that time either when they busted in and literally seized the equipment, took everything. One of the DJs was on his way to do a show and saw what was going on, so he double backed and waited until they left. And when he got there, everything was gone. All their, the transmitter antenna, all the mixing board, all the broadcast equipment was gone, and they left behind some paperwork of a seizure warrant and seizure order. And that was that. They seized it. So, this is still going on. There's people, we're still calling for a moratorium on busts, and we're still calling for all seized equipment to be returned. And, as far as what maybe listeners can do to support this is write letters to the FCC, and they do have a new address. It is 445 12th Street, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20554.
Repeat that, could you?
It's in the Portals. That's the name of the building, so you want to address it to the FCC at the Portals, 445 12th Street, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20554. And, just any sort of letter in support of micro radio and the need for community access to the airwaves that belong to us. And, we're talking about issues that you cannot talk about on public radio or especially corporate radio. All too often, corporate radio is beholden to the people that buy advertising on their airspace. And
definitely.
So they're not going to talk about, things like Shell Oil killing people in Nigeria or Chevron killing, being complicit with that as well. They're not going to talk about The Gap and other companies like Tommy Hilfiger, using child labor to make their crappy clothes.
They're not going to talk much about the sleeping ban.
Or the sleeping ban or any of these issues that really concern everyday citizens. So.
Also, I note that there's a free radio benefit coming up on Friday, January 22nd up at Pizza Junction.
Yeah.
Anybody, you want to tell folks where Pizza Junction is at the UCSC?
I'm actually not the person to do that. I've only been there one time and I couldn't tell you how to get there. I'm hoping to get a ride with somebody.
If you drive to the campus, although I don't know, they start locking people off the campus at 8 o'clock?
I believe so. So you if people want to go up there from down here, they're going to have to go early, hopefully.
But I guess you can, if you've got questions, you can always call the Free Radio Santa Cruz voicemail at 427-4523 for this. Again, Friday, January 22nd, 8 p.m. benefit at UCSC for Free Radio with the Lonely Kings, Maliza Bañales. Was it B.J. Piazza?
DJ Piazza. And
Herbert.
Clatterbox will be there. Yeah. Herbert, Bantelto.
Low Rent.
And there's also some other surprises in the works at the moment, so maybe possibly even some sort of raffle.
The Beatles?
The Beatles. We're going to get the Fab Four out there.
The Fab Three, anyway. and Stephen King as well.
And the Rolling Stones will be rolling in for a surprise gig there. Yeah.
Wow, man. That could be the thing. So.
Pearl Jam, too. Wow. Pearl Jam will be there.
Pearl Jam, yeah.
So come on out to the benefit. It's only $5.
Mike Rodkin singing folk songs.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe we could get a debate with you and Rodkin. That would be kind of cool.
I've been asking for Rodkin to call me back, but as of yet, the good council member has not seen fit to do so. But perhaps he will in the days ahead. We're talking to Vinny, the V-Man, or Vicious Vinny, as some people call him.
Only you.
Only me, actually. And I guess I was one more question I wanted to ask you. Let me think. Oh yeah, I think the Free Radio is sledding around looking for a city council endorsement. What is that all about?
That's very correct. We have put forth a resolution through Councilmember Christopher Crone to be submitted to the city council for review and hopefully for the full majority vote. We're basically just asking them to support us. There's a lot of legal language in the resolution, but that will be coming up for the January 26th regular council meeting. At this time, we don't know which session it will be at, but hopefully we'll have that information by the week's end.
So you should come on the 25th to the big public meeting at Loudoun Nelson and support ending the sleeping ban, and then come the next night and afternoon to the regular city council meeting down at City Hall and support Free Radio.
Yeah, and anybody out there that wants to, you know, speak out at this, on this, please feel free, you know, give us a good word, or write a letter if you're a community group out there listening right now, somebody that we give free airtime to, or just anybody that's interested in our programming and listens, you know, feel free, write a letter on behalf of yourself in support of what we're doing and address it to the city council, and that will be included in all this paperwork that we've been giving them to hopefully, you know, get support from the city council at the city council level, just to basically tell the FCC to leave us alone, that what we're doing is a vital community service around here and that people support it. So.
Sounds good to me.
Right on.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Robert.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Happy John Dine was a friend of mine. He lived here by the sea, down on the streets of San Francisco. He always laughed. Happy and I went to church one night. Thank God and ate our fill. Asked him if he had any money. Give me a fake dollar bill. Where is Happy? He's gone away. And it's hard for me to be happy